love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me wanna go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. It's many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Old pal to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
This is Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WAFT, Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board today is Sunday, September the 13th. Try that again. This is October now. I'm only a month off. October the 13th, that's why it's fall already. And this is the Prairie Monk program, WAFT's weekly look at rails, trails, greenways, conservation, and everything else that Dave has been up to this week.
Well, start off with, I went to Paganel's annual fish fry with a huge bonfire, but very, very interesting. We've been talking about communities and how you get things together. These are people who overlap in many ways and very, very friendly, and it's the way communities get things done. I won't talk too long about that. I have a guest, Annie Monatz, and I'll get her to introduce herself, but she's rather wonderful. She's been doing things to try and save a Royer design high school. If you don't know, Royer was a relatively famous architect here in the 20s, and many of our buildings in Champaign and Urbana are Royer buildings. He's known nationally. Brian Adams locally has written a book about him. His buildings are all over. And Anya comes from Paxton, and there are several Royer buildings there, including the city building. And I'll turn it over to Anya.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show. Yes, as you said, so I'm from Paxton. Well, I'm actually not. I grew up in Chicago, but my Norwegian ancestors settled in Paxton in the late 1800s, and it turns out that my grandmother, Josephine Gertrude Stange, was actually the first graduating class of this building, East Lawn, in Paxton back in 1925.
Wow.
And I didn't realize that, actually, until I was doing research to try to save this building, because I thought she graduated from West Lawn. And as I was doing research, I then went to the library and found, like, the old yearbook and got to see her photo. And it just brought the whole thing home to me in a different way. But I would have wanted to save the building regardless. It's just now it's tugging at my heartstrings.
your early settler people had farmland.
Yes, they were farmers right outside of town, and they're all buried at Ponsbadon Cemetery.
Pronounce that one again. I've never been able to handle that.
Pronounce it wrong. Sorry, my cousin would correct me, as well as several people in town. So I think it's Pontoppidan locally.
Pontoppidan. It's a rural church, probably about 6 miles west of Paxton.
And you have some prairie out there, right?
There was a prairie. The church planted a prairie. And I've been there and enjoyed it and been to a funeral there and a little burial up the, in a cemetery where probably your people are buried too.
Definitely. I love thinking about the landscape of Paxton as a community, because just to think that, like, so my grandma drove a Model T Ford, right? And so she would have gone into Paxton on a Model T Ford. At the
and all the garages
century.
Were the size of Model T Ford. You can not get a big car in these days. And the land is rolling there. You're on the Paxton Moraine. And so there are little places where there's water accumulated. So you have swampland, you have different habitats, and it's just wonderful. So you're coming back to Paxton,
but
you own...
I own three houses in town. I love fixing up historic buildings. And so, and there are a lot of beautiful historic buildings in town just that need to be fixed up. And some people are amazing at fixing them up, and some have been neglected for years. And so...
Yes, I see trees growing out of one of them.
I'm trying to work on that. So I used to be a wildland firefighter, and I'm familiar with the chainsaw. And so I've been trying to get a lot of my weed trees that have been growing on some of my neglected properties out, but it's just taken some time.
Yes. And so we've been talking before this program, and we really don't know what we're expecting of each other, but it's interesting that you have your roots in Paxton at the moment, and that's happening around the U.S. There are people who are coming back to their communities with restaurants, and I think you mentioned restaurants in Paxton.
Oh yes, like Paxton's revitalizing itself, and they're doing a great job, I think. It's a town of 4,500 people, and it's one of those towns where now, like, our main street is becoming alive again, which, and I think that's why I started talking about my Norwegian ancestors, because back in the day, Paxton was an incredible community. It was the county seat. My grandma was super proud to come from the county seat. And so, like, there are just these relics, these, like, amazing old buildings that are built super well. And I would just love for the town to really take advantage of these properties, because they just offer that, like, beautiful aesthetic. And so the school I'm trying to save is this large brick structure. And it's been standing nearly 100 years. And it can easily stand another 100 more. But instead, they want to cost the taxpayers over $1 million to destroy this building, when it could eventually be one of the best assets to our community.
Yes. I see revitalization. I see a tool rental place that's grown and is large. We have to rent from it if we... I'm going to work on a prairie.
Oh, the Paxton Hardware place, True Value. Yeah, I've rented a lot of tools from them.
Yes.
From, like, scissor lifts to, like, so I've done a lot of my own home renovations, and so I've rented, like, edgers and sanders for refinishing my floors.
Yes.
And I love the fact that they exist. Like, that's the other amazing thing about Paxton, is that it's still a community. Like, we have a 24-hour local grocery store, which I think is phenomenal, because in most towns, that's a Walmart. And we have a family-owned business instead.
You have a pharmacy.
Yes, we have a pharmacy.
Hudson's.
Yes. And it's really cool. I mean, it's an independent pharmacy, so it's not owned by Walgreens or Walmart or anything. Like, this is a family business.
And you
have
a water
amazing.
Tower.
Oh, yes, the water tower, which I would love to climb one day, because rock climbing is a side hobby of mine. I just keep looking up on the inside and outside, just wanting to climb it.
And there's a city building that goes with it, I think.
Yes, there's a museum. And so the Paxton Foundation has been incredible at saving these buildings and doing amazing jobs. Like the jail almost got torn down years ago, and which was the silliest thing, because it's one of the oldest sandstone jails in all of Illinois. And I was reading the paper, and I was just shaking my head, and I was so thankful that people stepped up to save that building.
Yes,
and now it's beautiful. They really did an amazing job making like the front part into a museum. And then you get the old jail cells you can actually still go in, and they're left in a wonderful state. And they have paranormal visitors that come in to try to like call the ghosts. And it just kind of, I would love actually to like make it into like an Airbnb experience or something so that more people would come to town. But that's totally up to the people that run it. And it sounds like they actually have quite a few
visitors.
I can
remember going to Sir Doris. And they had a little jail that would hold about two people. It was made out of planked wood.
Oh, wow.
And you had to climb up. The prisoners were down low. And so you could house two drunks. and the village didn't want it, so it was on some farmland. But it was there. And Paxton has an airport.
Yes, they do, but I'm not sure the state of it at the moment. Yes, I know that they have to maintain gasoline there, but I'm not sure if they're excited they have it.
So, and they've gone away from this three-story school to a one-story school, and it's just been expanded, and they've been celebrating the expansion.
Right, so that was a big deal. It came up on a referendum in 2016, and the whole project, it was this big debate, because in order to get the historic East Lawn building up to cost of living standards for the, or I don't remember exactly what that word is, but for the students to be in, like it was going to be a lot of money that would need to be sunk in, because you have like specific school requirements. And so they were faced with that, and so they were trying to figure out what their options were. And so on the ballot, they put an option to also put a addition to Clara Peterson and then also renovate Clara Peterson. Mm-hmm. And that was what they eventually decided was the best option. But then the unfortunate thing is that on the referendum, the way it was worded, it was all of this emphasis on Clara Peterson. And then, by the way, guys, we're going to demolish East Lawn. And so that was really tricky, because it really kind of polarized the votes, because you weren't voting for one thing. You were essentially voting for two things. You were voting for whether you were okay as a taxpayer to allow for the $30 million construction of the addition, which could also be a great benefit to the children in the community. And then the second thing was whether you were okay with demolishing the historic school building. And so I had to vote no, even though I totally was actually okay and excited about this renovation for the kids at Clara Peterson. But I had to vote no because I couldn't bear the historic building coming down. And I think other people were conflicted in the same way. Like my close friend who was working with me on this admits that she voted yes because she just read the first couple lines, and she has a 4-year-old son, and she knew that he would go into the school system. And so she had to vote yes because she was excited for a new facility for her child. But she didn't even read through the entire thing to realize that it also was at the cost of a historic building.
So the separation would have been very helpful.
Oh, absolutely. And so it was a very misleading result. And then the result, it barely passed. Mm. It was almost a 50-50. Mm. And I mean, voting in our country is, if there's even one vote over, it's a vote for a yes. The problem is as a statistician, I know that if this vote took place an hour later, an hour prior, another day, you know, there are different people that could or couldn't have made it, and it could have easily been a vote for no.
And the interesting thing is that from an asbestos point of view, this is a dangerous creature. it's very costly to remove the asbestos, but if the asbestos is in the ceiling or in the basement, it can be contained. So if a building like this is reused, you don't have to spend $1.5 million to get the asbestos out.
Well, there's an interesting thing, because when I first started fighting for this building, the asbestos was in it, and I felt like it was totally fine as long as it's sealed. Asbestos is only really a hazard if it's impacted in any way.
As if it's flying around in the air and getting in your lungs.
Right. But as long as it's contained, like, and a lot of it's in like floor tiles, and you're not going to just go and randomly like wreck floor tiles. And so you could seal them, you could put tile over it, you'd be fine. But what happened is actually asbestos abatement has already began in the building. So it started August 26th. And so, even though the building is now in a different state than I would have loved to take it on as a project, it's now in almost a better state for developers because they've cleaned out the asbestos. And so people that would want to go in to make this maybe a nursing home or assisted living or condos or a Montessori school, they are starting now with a clean slate, essentially. And so that has potential.
It has other disadvantages. It needs elevators.
Well, depending on the project you want.
Yes.
Because I think it could even be like a hydroponics facility and we could have like spinach year round for our community.
You have to watch the water there because water can bring mold. And so hydroponics is probably not ideal, but it's a suggestion. So you have lots of suggestions as to what might happen. And you have people, and it looks like 50-50 are very interested in preserving. And you have signatures. I think you have something like 500 signatures.
Oh, right, yes. We did put a petition out there to try to save the building. But it's the school board isn't even like listening to us, which is so frustrating. And they're not even communicating with the city, as far as I know, as a citizen, which is also frustrating from a civilian standpoint, because these are our taxpayer dollars, and I feel like the community should be involved in this on so many levels, because thinking of like future economic development as one, as well as like this historic building means a lot to our community. As I said, my grandmother was the first graduating class. There are a lot of people that have spent like several generations at this high school, and so to have it standing kind of represents much
yes.
more than they realize.
And it's very near to 45, which is a main drag that came through. And 45 is kind of a quiet road because 57 has taken most of the traffic, which
correct.
Means that you can do things like tourism. You can, and it's just a stone's throw from 45. And it's surrounded by little businesses and a funeral home and...
Absolutely.
It's near a park. There's a little park adjacent. and it's in a part of the community that has reasonably large houses that could be part of historic walks. And I just think it could work. There used to be nearby a broom factory, a broom corn factory, where people used to grow hemp or grow broom material that could be used in the making of brooms. So there's been some retreat from business reality, but it's coming back in terms of like the organization is renting out equipment.
The first proposal I voiced to the community was to have East Lawn, through adaptive reuse, become a boutique style hotel that was like an interactive experience, because we need a draw to our community as well. So we can't just have a hotel and we can't just have businesses. We kind of need something that puts our town back on the map and draws people in. But my thought too with that is, as people would stay at the hotel or go to these experiences, which I'll have to explain a bit more about, they'll drive through town, they'll get off 57, because we're actually in a good position. We're 30 miles north of Champaign-Urbana, and then we're 2 hours south of Chicago. And so if you're on the route down to Memphis, essentially from the city, like this
halfway.
Is a place you can interact with.
Yes, we have an evil intent of taking tourists off at Kankakee and coming down 45, so visiting prairies at Loda, visiting historic cultural details at La Rabe or Sedan, or just looking at the history. Tourists are coming, eco-tourists are coming then. They want to find out who you are, what you are, what you're doing, and what's exciting about your town. And so there is excitement about your town. And Paxton does want to invite people in, and they have in the process of putting up a 150-foot flag that you will see.
I think that's an invitation for people to get off the highway.
I think so, too. And there are interesting things. You're on a moraine, and that moraine, you can stand. The railroad line was the dirt, the glacial till from there came down to Champaign and created underpasses. So traffic, those T-model Fords wouldn't have to wait for trains to go past. They could go underneath the train. So it raised up the railroad level, and all the soil came from Paxton. So now you can see a north-south Canadian National going through the moraine without having to have an engine to push it up and over the moraine.
Right, that was a big deal.
And there was an east-west line that went through to Gibson City and through to Lafayette, and that has been retired. But there's a museum there. There's a railroad museum, and it's got its legs in the Monticello Railroad Museum. And there's interesting things happening. And there's 10 miles of interesting prairie between Paxton and Rantoul, where there's a main line and an old Route 45 hidden in the bushes. And it's prime case for having a kiosk here and there in this parking space. You're not going to take cars down that, but you could take bicycles down there. And it's a prairie pathway. And at the south end, we have 9 acres of reconstruction prairie that uses that extra width. So we're hoping that people who are doing things in Paxton will also look at the nature of what was their heritage.
Well, I love that concept too. You and I have talked about that before, like the intersection of like prairie conservation and cycling, and then kind of the ecotourism. And I think that's something that would be hard for most communities to wrap their mind around, that they have that potential. But they really do, and it's just an amazing thing, because I love cycling, and I've done like bike touring on the Pacific Coast, and so the coast of Oregon, and I just love the pace, because, you know, you take your gear and you're out there for a couple of days, and I always thought it'd be so cool. I've always actually wanted to cycle all the way to Chicago, but it's hard to navigate the south side, so I've always been a little bit
That's
nervous.
Why we're starting at Kankakee. We would go make a trace. A trace is a glorified trail. And you would go south all to Cairo and perhaps to New Orleans. So you have to think big. And part of what you're after is a strategic action plan so that people can see the potential of what you're talking about. It might be a book that would have 2 pages for people who don't want to read very much, but 200 pages for engineers and others.
Well, yeah, there's so many levels to this project.
Yes.
And that's the problem, too, is because there are so many possibilities. Trying to communicate ones that are, like, very viable to our community members is kind of tricky because, like, I can brainstorm with you on all the ways that I think this is amazing, but for other people to have something tangible, because this school could be so many things, because I loved talking to you earlier when this was like a boutique hotel experience about having one of the rooms, since East Lawn is such a huge building, to have one room devoted to kind of like a prairie conservation museum. And so then you also get like cyclists coming from like Kankakee down to Champaign. Or what I love too is like, so I used to bike to Champaign and back for training. And so that's a nice 60-mile route. But I also met other cyclists, you know, they'd do their like 100-mile weekends or their 50-milers. And so you could go bike from Champaign to Paxton and have lunch and back. Or you can go, and if like 30 miles is a lot for you, you can go stay in a hotel and then come back. And through that, have like wonderful like routes through the countryside, or like you were mentioning kiosks and pit stops where you get to like learn about the prairie. Because I don't know, there's something about cycling where it's just you slow down, but you get to take in a lot of information. So you're a lot faster than walking, but it's so much slower than driving. And so I love that kind of concept too.
You almost have people who want to go from A to B for exercise, but you want, then you want the people who have never seen 50 species of prairie, and they're going to take 2 days to go the same distance. And then you get to Rantoul, and there's an east-west railroad line. It used to be called the Pungan Vine, and it has installed an urban prairie, an urban rail trail.
Oh, nice.
With open space where there were yards, and so that can be prairie. At the moment it's mown. We're not quite into mowing. That's a problem, because mowing is a job for people.
I don't like mowing either.
So how do we work with that? So how do you move this idea politically? Do you have a member that might be interested in this sort of thing.
In what context? I mean, I know a lot of people that are interested in various levels of this project, but it's still, the crux of the problem is we need to get the demolition process stopped in order to then, because I've dabbled in like, I would love to start a nonprofit for a variety of things. You and I have also talked about that too, because you have your own. And so, I mean, a lot of things need to start working together, but unless we can actually stop the process of demolition of this beautiful building, we can't have this time or the space or the energy to devote to like constructing the next step. And so, yes, that's somewhat problematic.
So you have some rules that the demolition people have to go by. And so you're bringing in legal.
Yes, there is potentially legal consequences.
Legal aspects of removing it. School, does it become owned by whom? And do you develop that open space and the park next to it, or do you? So say something about the rules that are state rules that are associated with the removal of such a building.
Are you talking about the need for the IEPA permit?
Yes. Okay. So what is I tell people
so
what
the
IEPA
Illinois is. Environmental Protection Agency. There's a really interesting thing. So this building is eligible for the National Register, and I put that application in back when we started with this project. The thing about the National Register is it's usually an honorary thing, and so, but in the case of if an entity has a permit or funds from the state or the feds, then that plays a different thing. And so if you have government funds, then you're restricted on what you can do with a registered historic building. And it's not like you can't do anything, but it just means that you actually then have to contact the State Historic Preservation Office and work with them to mitigate adverse effects. And so I think there's a big misunderstanding there, because a lot of people don't think that some people think that you can't do anything if it's a National Register property, and some people think that the National Register has no protection. But in the case of East Lawn, there is a permit that we are pretty sure that they have to actually apply for through the Illinois EPA, and that has to do with stormwater drainage. And it's basically because the size of this building site is great enough that it's going to affect the stormwater drainage in the community. And so they have to apply for this. The thing is that we've told them that they need to apply for this, and we've contacted the IEPA, and I can't find out if they've actually applied for it or not, or what that process is, which I feel is just a really bad thing if this isn't like a publicly acknowledged thing. And I mean, I know that they say in the newspaper that they're gonna follow the law, but like, are they following the law on this? And then if this permit goes through, then that means that the National Register status makes them need to contact the Illinois State Historic Preservation Office to discuss the mitigating effects. And so it's kind of like, I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but I'm getting the impression that they're just trying to bust through and go through the demolition and then ask forgiveness later, which is just making me very frustrated, if you can imagine.
So, yes, there are communities that very carefully keep themselves out of the state and federal domain so that they can do what they want to do.
Strategic.
Yes. So that's why I asked if you have a member that is a supporter for this, a member of the House of Representatives or at the state level or at the federal level.
If you know anyone, please let them know. I've reached out, but it's the time frame on this is also really tricky, and so.
Yes, if you have an awkward situation, then if you see the wrecking ball arrive, you know that the speed of removal is designed to eliminate the problem. And very quickly.
Unfortunately. And I mean, the problem too is I don't necessarily want to go this route, but between the way the referendum was done and then this IEPA issue with the permit, these could both be grounds for an injunction, possibly. The only thing with an injunction is that that's also more cost to the community taxpayers, which is, I was trying to save our community money in the first place and save the old building. And so.
Yes. it seems that the control is in the hands of the school board, mm-hmm. and not in the hands of the community.
Right. Yeah. The city isn't extending themselves out there. And I don't know if it's because they don't think that they can do anything, or if they're just nervous because this is a large building. And I'm sure from their viewpoint, there's a bit of a liability. Because also, as we've talked about before, there are other examples of neglected school properties in adjacent towns as well as in our town. And so it's hard when you see a neglected property of that size to imagine it being something amazing. Mm-hmm. The only thing is you still have to imagine what the possibilities are and to do like due diligence on like getting requests for proposals and like asking about development. Like this was never even on the table.
This has never been put up for sale.
Not even talked about. Even like in the wording going up to the referendum, they weren't even thinking about East Lawn ever being anything else other than either being renovated or torn down. And that's a big issue. I mean, this is an expense to the taxpayer. This is a historically significant building that it's really beautiful. It's beautiful brick. It has great detail. It has, you know, this prominent architect that Urbana has a whole district named after, built this building, also built our courthouse. I saw that Brian Adams, when he came on your show, they put up an image of a map of the architect Royer's buildings throughout the state. And this is it's historical ecotourism in a way.
Yes.
But you could tour these various buildings that Royer designed, and that would bring people with interest to these various communities, which would benefit so many.
And some of those buildings have been restored and are functionally reused.
Right, with like apartments, I think, was one example that you talked about.
So tell people what a request for proposal is. There are two types. One is coming from the federal government. They're asking you for to respond to they're donating certain money to your organization. But there's also the request where you might put together a request for a proposal that the city might use. So tell us a little bit more about it.
So I think on the simplest level, I keep emphasizing request for proposal as opposed to just an outright bid, because since a lot of these properties, if they just go into the hands of the highest bidder, there's no guarantee to the community of what that means to the community. And so the request for proposals is essentially a way where the organization, where the building might not be even transferred to the highest bid, but it would be the best proposal for that community. And so that's the way I picture it. And so you can request anything to be in that proposal, like long-term planning, what this means for the community, predictions on tax payments, as well as tourist dollars like coming in, and you can ask anything. And so that would be the design of either the city, ideally, because I also feel strongly now that school boards should not actually be in charge of these buildings once they're vacated, because they're focusing on education and not actually on development of buildings within a community. And so I think that should, I mean, it's not the way these are structured, because these are different entities politically, but it'd be really nice if that started to change, because we're losing a lot of historic school buildings because of this, because a lot of school districts just don't know necessarily like what to do with them.
So do you have a planning department? It's a small it's a small community, a small county. It's a T-shaped, upside down T.
Oh, the county itself, right.
Sort of the last pieces that hadn't been put together. So it's Gibson City, and it goes across towards Royal, and goes north towards Buckley.
I do know that the city council on Paxton has like various committees within the city council. And so their long-term planning and their economic development committees, I think, would be great to like talk about this and bring this issue to the community.
So if it's not happening at the strategic action plan level, which is a sort of a five-year plan, what shall we do? Can you write a dummy plan yourself?
Oh, I have. Well, because I, for the people, and I don't want to say that they don't have vision, but they just might not see what my vision is.
Well, the community welcomes leadership. They're not going to stand up and be counted on a podium. They're going to be there, but they need leadership, and they haven't got the confidence often.
Well, and I think it's also to understand that new ideas can exist in our town. Because a lot of things, like when I was first bringing this up on Facebook, a lot of the responses were like, well, that'll work in Chicago, but it couldn't work here. Mm. And it's like, well, a lot of things start in cities and in innovation centers and then trickle into various communities. And so even though that's working now in Chicago and you might not be able to imagine it, in 5 years, you might be like, oh, yeah, that would have been perfect. Like if we had a brewery in this building, I mean, there's so many things that we could do. And so I actually put my own proposal together as like a way to kind of demonstrate what I thought a viable option was, but then that we should actually shop this out and find other people with interests in development. And I bring up the hydroponics thing because I was fascinated. In Chicago, they're doing this a lot in old warehouses.
Yes.
And it's becoming a whole new thing. And so I was just like, this building can be anything. Because the people's go-to is that it'll become either condos or an assistive living. And like, that's great. Like, it totally could be. But I'm saying, like, we could also think way beyond this box.
I just went to a sustainability conference.
Oh, really?
And there was a woman from Southside Chicago. And she gets all sorts of awards. There were some of these big factories being closed out, and some of them were coal-generated electrical facilities. And there was a temptation to move that building into outside people who would use it for something that only employed five or six very astute people. But she was wanting, who are you going to employ locally? How do we work with this? And outrageous as she was, she got people together, and they eventually got this big building to be something that employs quite a few people, and it has community character.
Yes.
It brings people together.
That's exactly what I see. Like, no matter what you do, the building this size, you need a lot of jobs, both on the construction side of it, as well as like once it's actually whatever entity it is, for maintenance, for if it was a hotel. I mean, you're talking about a lot of employment. It could also be a factory warehouse, like for an actual like company as well. And so these are all things that benefit the community in the long run. And this building is a solid brick structure. And so like, if we lose it, we are losing out on this potential economic development that's just like ready for something new for our community. And that frustrates me.
Well, at this same conference, I got the impression that there were people who would want to say, let's put a number on the things we think about. It's academic research. And then there was the lady that was from Southside Chicago who said, we have a rough idea of what the problem is. Let's go for it. It's they're two different cats. You need both. But you need labor and industrialization figures to tell you how many people out of work, who are doing what.
Oh, but, and Paxton, I mean, there are a lot of people that could use work. And good jobs. Like, it's just not that community. We also don't even have public transportation. So if you're in that community, you're stuck if you don't have a car.
So you don't have a bus system.
No. The Greyhound doesn't stop there. The Amtrak used to stop there when my grandma was growing up and hasn't stopped there since the early 1900s.
I would sometimes go to Chicago by train. I would stand in the back carriage back window, and I'd watch the prairie as I could go, so I could tell what was flowering and what was doing at the moment. And I would get the greyhound back, and they're not supposed to stop at these places, but I would be able to say, can you stop me at Otto? And I'll get out. And then I got onto at Otto. They were repairing the railroad line, and there were like six buses loaded with workers. And I crawled onto those buses and told them what they were working with, what the plants were.
And tour guide.
About 8 or 10 years later, I was at a WEF fest, and a guy who was tattoos all over came up to me and said, I know who you are. He says, you crawled onto one of our buses and told us what we were working with. And so he had forgotten. And that sort of thing you have to do a little bit. Oh, the difficulty is that you get a name for doing that sort of thing, which is not in lockstep with the general trend of things. And so you have to be very careful not to overdo that sort of thing. And it's so you happen to be leading the push at the moment. And that,
or at least I'm the public face
yes,
of this push.
So that that can be a very difficult role to occupy.
I've lost a lot of sleep over this already, but I knew that I would lose even more sleep had I done nothing.
Yes, and you have your roots there, and as an academic person, you're likely to stay there.
I mean, I'm already invested. I have 3 properties in that town, and my life takes me all over the world. And so I love having, I actually have been calling Paxton my base camp affectionately, because I spend a lot of time, like my main hobby is mountaineering. So it's probably where I got base camp from. But so I'll travel like for mountaineering, I'll travel for like skiing and snowboarding stuff. I'll travel for work. I'll travel for research. And I've lived in places that are so much more expensive. I was in Hawaii for 3 years. I had a fellowship with the military for 8, working as a forensic anthropologist. And it's amazing, like, when you're in Hawaii, I mean, even as a grown-up, you have to, like, have roommates practically to survive, you know, on
yes,
that budget. If you're living in Colorado, it's the same thing. Like, I went out there. I had, like, 5 roommates as a grown person in, like, a 1-kitchen, 1-bathroom house. And I was still paying like $600, and that was on like a subsidized like employee housing situation. And so like when I come back to Paxton, I mean, the houses I own, like I'm still fixing them all up, but like they're gorgeous historic houses with like, you know, carved woodwork and wood floors and just great bones. And I mean, I feel like $1 million when I'm in that town compared to...
But you're
to
also an artist.
Yes.
And you can infuse the art.
Well, I mean, it inspires you, I think. Because, like, I think of, like, the craftsmanship and the quality that came out of that, like, 100 years ago and all the effort that put into that building, like, stained glass and everything.
Yes, and you had larger families. So some of the big houses have been broken up for smaller apartments.
That, very true.
So then sometimes kind people come back and make it a one family home.
Which is wonderful too, because it's cool to see it back.
So State Street, I think, is a street that has a lot of bigger, older homes.
Yeah, and Center Street does too. Yeah. And they're mansions, because it's just back in the day, Paxton was a serious place to be with like the farming and the Route 45 and the railroad. And so you can't build houses like this anymore. I mean, you can build like large square footage homes, but they're not the same.
They're
just
mansions.
Don't have that character. Yeah.
But some of these houses had widow's walks. There are towers on the top. And it wasn't necessarily a looking for a widow or a widow looking for a farmer. But they could look out on that farmland.
Or look out at the stars at night.
Yes.
That'd be amazing.
Some people actually slept on their roofs because they could see.
There are actually quite a number of sleeping porches still in existence on buildings in Paxton, where like the upper story has like a screened-in area. And it's really quite cool.
Yes. And yes, you can. Some of them have skylights that...
You can, and a lot of these buildings are surprisingly intact, which I love. So I grew up in Chicago, and I got to see a lot of flux in neighborhoods happen. But one of the problems, too, is when you have money roll into a neighborhood to gentrify it, sometimes a lot of development destroys the original character. You know, like kitchens get renovated.
Yes.
And you lose a lot of things where, like, in one of my properties, I have the old original farm-style sink, and it was in the basement, luckily, but I got to, like, bring it upstairs and put it back in. And, you know, a lot of these buildings are still going to have, like, dumbwaiters and, like, just those cool things. And the same thing with the school. Before asbestos abatement, that school was, like, pristine from a historical perspective because they hadn't injected all of the money to, like, recoat everything in vinyl and do whatever, like, most schools end up doing for renovations. And so I was just, it was like a kid at a candy store just walking into this. And it's so funny because, like, I'm sure community members look at that and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so outdated, it's so neglected. And I'm like, it's so perfect. You have no idea how amazing it is to see a building in this state. But I'm afraid that since asbestos abatement has happened, a lot of things probably have changed.
Well, there was a sale and many of the interior accoutrements were removed.
Right, because there were like built-in cabinets, like wood built-ins,
yes,
and lockers, and they were so cool.
The building is brick, and the brick structure is rather wonderful. And there's an extension, and the extension has been made perfectly to match.
Right. The only thing is the interior is cinder block walls as opposed to brick walls. But I figured, yeah, like, whatever business could take over could also use that to their advantage. Yeah.
You are very active, and you like to have climbing facilities. So you at one stage thought of the gymnasium as being a...
Oh, an amazing climbing gym?
Yes.
I totally drew pictures of, like, I thought it'd be so cool because I love the whole upcycled concept. Obviously, I love working with historic material. And I thought it'd be so neat to actually have, like, a full... So in this auditorium, if you can imagine, this gym space, it's this cool historic feature where they actually designed it so it's both a gym and an auditorium in one. And so you actually, like, look at plays that are taking place on a basketball court. Mm-hmm. But I thought it'd be really neat and not invasive at all to, like, put a large, like, rock climbing wall in the back made of all, like, historic timbers. And then just really cool features and holds. And, like, as a, like, an aesthetic backdrop, too. Because, like, you could make it look really nice. And then as a climber, I love climbing literally everything. And so, like, I would love to climb the outside of that building, actually.
It's interesting. You have some contact with the military. The military people who are enlisting people have a portable climbing device, which was at the Urbana.
Does it kind of look like a treadmill, like an upright treadmill? Is that what you're talking about?
No. I guess it would be about 30 feet high. Mm-hmm. And you get into a harness so that you don't hurt, and you climb up this wall. It's like a circular pipe, probably about a 3-foot-wide pipe, and it has hand places, and people succeed in getting to the top, and then they can drop down. Yes, the physical nature of this. I went to look at the... cutting through the moraine, and I was standing there on a bridge, and then went by on the main street of Paxton a troop of people. They were ADA people that were riding bicycles, and they were on a tour. And,
oh, wow, awesome.
It's just, so there's physical parts of this.
Well, I love interactive spaces, too, and I love community spaces and community ideas. So one thing, too, with the initial proposal I had is that I would love even, like, you could rent historic bikes. Not historic, but, like, retro bikes to, like, just cruise around
bicycles
town.
Bicycles that didn't have pedals. You had to wheel yourself along.
There are just so many options for this. Oh, and another thing I wanted to touch on, too, because we kind of talked about it earlier, but Paxton is actually, they're just finishing a solar ordinance for our community, which is a great thing for the community to do. Yes, solar panels on the roof. And that is one large roof. And so you could have a full-on solar garden. And that building, even if... So if demolition stopped, even if no one invested in the property for 10 years, but then Paxton or someone put solar panels on the roof alone as a solar garden feeding back in the system and then maintain the exterior, I mean, it'd be fantastic. Both with the fact that you'd be getting green energy right into the community, as well as with the right solar roof, you'd be preserving the roof of that building.
And formally, you're teaching.
Well, Paxton doesn't realize how green it can be. I mean, it has a lot of things like setting up for like this perfect existence in the future. But I think people are just starting to realize, because like our main street, the pharmacy, the Trader Joe's even knows we exist because of Paxton Packaging, which packages like high-end it's beef jerky type of things.
Yes.
But like, I mean, literally, like I had a guest stay at my house who came from England and wants to package up some like really fancy Spanish meats. And I was chatting with him, and Trader Joe's told him about Paxton and told him to come visit because of Paxton Packaging. Like, we have all these like really cool hidden things.
Yes.
And like, people don't realize this. And I think even like within the community, like it's taken me a while to realize this. And I'm just like, we could actually have quite a future. Yeah.
When my little CRX bombed out in Paxton. A friend that offered to bring me back to Champaign worked at that factory.
Paxton Packaging?
She was wanting to save the school, but she was buying things for her organizations. And what is what is the number of school children? Is the school children growing? What's the population?
It is declining steadily. It has been declining for the last decade. Slowly, but it is. And that's a big problem, because not only is our community, are we invested in this long-term school project, but also as a community, if you need to sustain yourself and thrive, you're going to need the next generation. And so I would love it if the right kind of development came into East Lawn, so that we could like get more families to come into the area, because these are houses. I mean, it's a very affordable place for families to live. And a lot of people actually don't end up working in Paxton, but working in adjacent communities or even
working
in
Champaign. Yes, for a long time when Chanute was an Air Force base at Rantoul, this was a bedroom community.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful community. It's walkable. You have a lot of parks. You have a lot of resources. I love how, like, the people on the main strip, I mean, the new restaurants, Humble Hog and the Harvest Ale House are owned by Ben Grice, and he's done an amazing job. And then other people that own other restaurants. The arcade has been around since my grandma was in high school, but it's a family-owned business. It's gone through different generations, and they've just renovated their property. There's another, I mean, we have like two bakeries. We're not a big town, but we have like all these like little things that I just love.
But you also have a cemetery. There's Prospect Cemetery. It's named Prospect because at one stage Paxton was called Prospect.
Yes, Prospect City, as well as Prairie City, and then finally Paxton, I think.
And I think Champaign has a Prospect Avenue that goes north and south.
I think prospects were all over the country at some point.
Okay. But I imagine that sometimes it would be that you were going to Prospect.
Another thing I wanted to mention, too, is that so East Lawn, right now it's residential because that's what most schools are zoned as. But the thing is there actually was a former East Lawn on a lot adjacent to the current building that was demolished, I don't remember when, decades ago. But so it, though, is actually adjacent to the Route 45 strip. And so these are such developable pieces of property in the town because the school doesn't need them anymore. And the old East Lawn, now it's just a park, but the equipment, the playground equipment has been removed. And so, but that's a property that if developed could easily be zoned commercial. And then once that's zoned commercial, then it's just one adjacent over to the current East Lawn building, which could be zoned. And so both of these properties, if Paxton really got their act together for like long-term development, these could change our community and like, you know, all sorts of ideas could be taken in.
So we're encouraging you to continue and to continue your academic work. and perhaps have people to be involved in Paxton too. For instance, students in planning, students in
oh, I would love that, because you could really, I mean, it's ripe for people to take on projects within the community. Like, I would love to see if aspects of, like, University of Illinois would be interested in, like, sustainability development long-term in the community, especially with, like, the solar ordinance and just the old building, the historic building, could be a model for so many buildings throughout Illinois. You know, if you put solar panels on them, like, how does that work? Like, how can you preserve and wait for the right opportunity without letting them go degrade too much?
So I went to a Sierra Club meeting after I read your letter to the newspaper. And I mentioned Paxton, and you have to know that Sierra Club is not Audubon, it's not Isaac Walton League, it's oriented to political strains. They recommend people. And I was wanting to say that this is an organization that might be able to help in such situations. And we were discussing the Kickapoo Trail, which is a nearby facility. There are people there who are looking at politics, but this is the politics of a small community. How do you do it? Can the Sierra Club look at something like that and help you in the background by having meetings? The fish fry that I went to yesterday was a magnet of all these sorts of people that are conservative and liberal that get together. The Sierra Club has been moving around various bars and meeting. Many of the people that come don't necessarily drink, but they move together. So there the table was extended from one table to two tables, and people were coming in, and there were probably 15 or 20 people there in the long run. And that sort of thing takes a lot of talent. We look for people who bring together people. And you're doing that, but it gets to be overwhelming after a while, and you almost need your own CEO to do
this. To just manage the people.
Yes, to know the names, to be on the computer. And then you can't frighten people with computers, because many people don't have computers. And so we can't take a program like this and put it on a computer, because it might be like killing a bug with a sledgehammer. You know, you have to be cautious about what you can do with this sort of program. But this sort of program could go to the state. It could go to the state historical people. It could go to national level. So what we're doing with WEFT is create a program that helps other people think about what they're doing and how.
I do love the broader scope of that, like bringing this to a broader level of like the state, because the thing is it's one thing to think about one school building going down in one community like Paxton, but if you're thinking about preserving Royer as an architect and his legacy, these school buildings are dropping like flies. And so if you want that history preserved in the state level is really something that needs to kind of like come in and like think about this.
Well, thank you, Anya Mitz. Minutes.
Minutes.
Minutes. So you have a first name of Jolan.
Yes.
I think you like Anya.
It's a weird tradition in my family. We all go by our middle names. It's so confusing. I apologize.
But thank you for coming 30 miles to do this. And we appreciate your efforts.
Thank you so much for having me
and
listening.
We'd like to help you. So this has been Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and no one else. Anya, did you say earlier that you actually saw the video that Dave did with the gentleman who...
Brian Adams?
Brian Adams.
Yes.
Does that mean you actually on YouTube?
Yes.
Oh,
it was
my,
hard to find.
I've
honestly
never met anyone like you before. So for those of you listening, everything that we're talking about here, you can actually see examples of when this episode goes on our YouTube channel. In fact, if you simply type in Prairie Monk in the YouTube search box, it will take you to the entire channel of Dave's videos. Then you have to go searching a little bit to find the exact one. Again, this will be for October the 13th. To find this episode. And again, it will be, you'll see both of them talking,